Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. Thanks for joining us. To check out our latest commentary, go to our blog at TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's T-A-I-L-O-R. MADE talkradio.blogspot.com. Hello to everyone tuning in from Australia, Asia, Africa, Antarctica, Europe, and of course, North and South America. We are excited to be with you once again. Today's topics include a special tribute to 9/11. And look at how our country has changed over the last decade. And I also want to ask the question, where were you during that horrific event? We also take a look at the president's job speech. Will he finally get cooperation from the Republican Party? Also, there are previously unheard recordings of the Jackie Kennedy tapes. The things she said about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was shocking. We conduct an analysis of the Republican presidential debate, and we reveal who has the best chance of beating President Obama, and we talk about why. And, of course, much, much more. So sound the alarm. Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family members and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. We would like to hear from you. Also, click the follow button. And you can always follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. Also, we have a chat room open today on Blog Talk Radio, so come out there and chat with us and talk about today's current events or this week's current events. But first, let's take a look at our current events. Where were you on the day of September the 11th, 2001? It's a simple question understood by anyone alive on September 11, 2001. An unwanted reminder of those who witnessed the confusion of America's day of crisis as uncertainty stretched beyond its borders and illustrated to the world man's capability of reaching out and doing harm to others. That September day started quietly as early fall leaves gently landed on top of the morning shadows of New York, Washington, D.C., and Pennsylvania, but turned horrible after passenger jets and skyscrapers fell out of the sky, holding thousands of souls trapped inside evil fires. Four commercial jetliners loaded with travelers and fuel were hijacked in flight, and then used in a choreographed death wish by determined men who took control of the nation's course and momentarily dictated its history. All of it captured in high definition on television and on the internet. The 10th anniversary of 9/11 is today, and chances are good that you remember where you were on that day. It is probably much easier than, say, recalling what two teams played in the Super Bowl that year, or who won NASCAR, the Masters, or even the World Series. After the break, I would like to hear from you. Where were you on September the 11th, 2001? What do you remember most about that horrible day? Has America changed? If so, how? Are we safer now than we were 10 years ago? I am looking forward to this exchange as we look back and reflect. We'll also be talking about the president's speech made this week. Called it the American Job Act. He says he wanted to create more jobs. And the president is sending Congress the American Job Act, a set of ideas supported by both Democrats and Republicans in the past. And he wants them to pass it right away. The purpose of the American Job Act is simple. But put more people back to work and put more money in the pockets of working Americans. Here's the things he wants to do. First, the American Job Act provides tax cuts for small businesses, not big corporations, to help them hire and expand now, and provides an additional tax cut to any business that hires or increases wages. Secondly, it puts more people back to work, including 280,000 teachers laid off by state budget cuts, first responders and veterans coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan, and construction workers repairing crumbling bridges, roads, and more than 35,000 public schools with projects chosen by need and impact. Thirdly, it helps out of work Americans by extending unemployment benefits to help them support their families while looking for work and reforming the system with training programs that build real skills, connect to real jobs, and help the long-term unemployed. Fourthly, it puts more money in the pockets of working and middle-class American by cutting in half the payroll tax that comes out of every worker's paycheck, saving families an average of $1,500 a year, and taking executive action to remove the barriers that exist in the current federal refinancing program to help more Americans refinance their mortgages at historically low rates. I think he mentioned 4% or lower in his speech. Lastly, the plan won't add a dime to the deficit and is fully paid for. So the question is, will Congress pass the bill? Why or why not? With all of the tax cuts front-loaded in this legislation, will the Tea Party and the Republicans support the president? I would like for you to weigh in on this issue. Also, the GOP presidential debate was this week, and I think Rick Perry just slaughtered his opponents. Now, Wednesday was the much-anticipated debate debut by Texas Governor Rick Perry, who announced his candidacy on August 13th and is already the field's frontrunner. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about the five reasons why I think that Governor Rick Perry will be the nominee and has the potential to beat President Obama. We'll also talk about that. And then finally, I want to talk about the ABC special this week that's going to be coming up on September 13th. Now, viewers will hear the former First Lady speak with historian Arthur Schlesinger Jr. about life in the White House and her husband, President John F. Kennedy. So Jackie Kennedy is going to be, there's going to be some tapes that was recorded years ago, and the recordings were made months after the president's 1963 assassination, and they were sealed until now. And there's going to be a special airing on September the 13th. Now, what I want to talk about today along those lines is the comments that she said about Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. So I would love to get you to weigh in on this. And after the break, we're going to definitely talk about those. So I would love to get your comments on any or all of these issues. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, that number is 323-580-5712. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to open up the phone lines. We'll be right back. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my eighth phone call.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. In just a few moments, we're going to open up the phone lines. But first, joining me today to talk about this week's current events will be the Esquire, Abby Phelps, also known as the Motor City Maharani. Now, she's a nationally respected empowerment, educational orator, and training specialist. Also, the executive producer of Current Events and syndicated columnist of the Ask Jima blog. That's askjema.blogspot.com. Welcome to you all.
Hey there. How are you, Patrick? Doing a great job as always.
Absolutely wonderful.
Great.
Good, good, good. So, first up, I want to talk about the September 11th tragedy. Now, of course, I posed the question, where were you on that day? And what perplexed me a little bit is the fact that, we always take time to remember these tragedies, but I really want to know why do we do that, Jima? Why do we take time to go back and kind of relive these activities, if you will?
I'm not sure why we do that to the degree that we do it. I understand the need to remember, but to the degree that we do it can almost be ad nauseum, where you're almost sometimes can re-traumatize people who may be on their path to healing and coming out of something. So I think sometimes we can do things ad nauseum and do it overkill, and it's just too much. I mean, it's been too much for me, and I didn't know anyone personally that that died that day or that was there in the city that day. But it's been too much for me, and I'm like, okay, I need to talk about something else. So if it's been too much for me and I'm that far removed, I can only imagine what it may be like for those that were right there that day. or for those who lost family members. So I think we can sometimes do things an overkill, no pun intended, but we can just do it too much. And for me, it was too much this year. It was just too much.
Abby, what do you say? Why do we take the time out to look back as opposed to look ahead?
Because, you know, as horrific as it was, Patrick, and listening audience, you know, oftentimes the sensationalism of the media capitalizes, and I hate to be so blunt and so direct, but it is what it is. And they sensationalize on the negative factors as a way, like you said, revisiting the tragedy, at the same time building their ratings. Because you think about it, CNN, with as much as inaccurate information as they supplied, and other networks, their ratings are over the top. Because why? Everybody in America that was alive, breathing, and of conscious mind can recollect the events of September the 11th. So once again, as Gina was saying, some people, even though they were just two blocks away from the elementary school, that said they actually witnessed the horrific tragedy, are beginning to mend, beginning to heal. You know, time does heal all wounds to certain degrees, but when you keep on sensationalizing and constantly putting reminiscent factors intact, you're opening up those wounds to fester, and once again, it's like salt entering the wound. It just keeps on over and over again wounding people and causing the wounds to be even more severe. And at the same time, people become not only in a state of being vigilant to protect themselves, they get into a state of fear and experience severe attacks of anxiety. And that's what a lot of people have been experiencing. If something doesn't seem right, they get over the top. If something doesn't look right, they start to stigmatize in their mind, oh, my God, another September the 11th. So it's just a combination of things. And like Gina said, I just wish that, you know, we could move forward from that, because I know in December 7th, 1941, when Pearl Harbor was attacked. I know that was a sensational hot topic for, you know, quite a few years, and people still relive that tragedy. But it comes to a point where you have to have equilateral balance. It was a terrible thing. Over 3,300 people died, of course, but life goes on.
You know, as we look back, I mean, because it has saturated the news all week, all month, basically. And yes. And I wanted to take a look back, because we do that in America. We do look back at what happened, special tragedy events of this magnitude. And so
yes.
I remember saying, you know, where were you when this happened? So I want to ask you, Abby, where were you when on this day? What were you doing when this tragedy took place?
Actually, I just got through having a parent meeting. We were talking about the upcoming NEET test, which is a standardized test of measurement in the area contents of curriculum focused as literacy, mathematics, and science. And I just got through with the workshop. And, you know, because we started like at 7:15 in the morning, then all of a sudden my principal called me into the office, and she started crying. She said, look what happened. Look what they did to the World Trade Center. And I said, what? The whole staff froze. You know, there was a PA announcement, and, you know, all the teachers in the classroom were told to turn on to CNN and to witnesses, and the children were horrified. I mean, K through fifth grade, those children were crying, they were screaming, not because they had anyone directly involved, but just the circumference of seeing human tragedy and human casualty. It just petrified our whole school faculty. Actually, we had to dismiss school an hour early as a precautionary measure, because we know with the Flight 98 and the other air flights that had taken in the air and had crashed, they were afraid, because we have the Renaissance Center in the city of Detroit and some other significant skyscrapers in our, you know, district, that we may be in danger. So school was dismissed early. Everybody was in a state of catastrophe and of fear.
Wow. So you know, I would like for my callers out there, listeners out there, to weigh in as well. And to do that, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And press 1 to talk. And if you just want to listen, just press 2, or you can just hold the line. But so, Gina, you know, as we look back, where were you during that time, 2001?
excuse me. I was living in Colorado at the time, so the time zone was a couple of hours behind New York. So I was actually getting dressed, getting ready to go to work. And I always cut my TV on to the Weather Channel in Colorado because you just never know what's going to happen in a day's time. So I was actually on the Weather Channel, and my sister called me from Kansas City and said, "Are you watching this?" And I said, "Watching what?" And she said, "Turn to CNN, turn to a news channel." And it was at that moment when I turned to the news channel that the second plane hit. So I was at home getting dressed, as I normally do, getting ready to go to work, and there in Colorado. And like I said, I was not watching that channel prior to my sister calling me, telling me to turn my TV on and turn to it, look what just happened. And I'm like, well, what happened? And then when I see the second plane, I was like, well, what's going on with that first building? So it took me a minute to gather myself, I guess, to see, you know, and then she was talking at the same time. I'm trying to listen to what they were saying on TV. And I was like, what? They did who, what? And so I was just really, I don't know what I felt, because I think as I was in shock probably, or just in disbelief, like, are you serious? This just happened right now? And I remember that week I was real excited because we were going, my sister and a couple of girlfriends and I, we were all going on a cruise together. And so that was just, you know, my last day at work before I took off to get ready to go on my cruise. So my mind wasn't really even on work because I was already thinking about my cruise. So that's what I remember. Is of course we didn't go on the cruise because everything was stopped, but that's where I was. I was in Colorado. Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, you talked about this range of emotions that you had or didn't have because you were trying to figure it out. I want to ask Abby this question. Abby, what were your emotions when you finally realized what had happened and you knew that this was an attack on our soil? What went through your mind? What were your emotions at that time?
First of all, when I saw my principal called me into the office and she was crying, I couldn't believe it, first of all. It looked like something that was an instant replay from a, you know, a real-to-life film that just was, you know, a scene shot. It didn't even look real. Then secondly, when I finally saturated in and we began to get some information about what had happened, I was in a state of shock. And I said, oh, my God, not here in America, you know, the land of the free and the home of the brave, not here. You know, we look at other, you know, foreign countries around the world experiencing something like that. Thirdly, I began to instill a sense of fear, saying, oh, my gosh, where are they going to strike next? And my mind went right to those very skyscrapers close in the proximity of our educational establishment and everything. So it was like a lot of mixed emotions as it related to what I experienced from that moment. Then finally, you know, when we got the call from downtown that we had to dismiss early, then reality finally kicked in, saying, oh, my gosh, we are in a state of war. And that's what I thought about. It was a war being fought on our very own soil. And my mind went back once again to Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. I looked at it as being the first launching to numerous attacks, and everybody went into the fear capacity and the fear mode. You know, everybody wanted to hurry up and get off the streets, hurry up and get home. You know, if you would go to the supermarket parking lots, they were generally really crowded, were like empty. Everything was like empty, like a very episode of the Twilight Zone.
Wow. We're going to go to our phone lines now. And just to remind the listeners out there, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1 to talk and 2 to listening. All right. We're going to go to our last 4-0-2-0-1. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
It's Clavius Gresham, and I'm calling all the way from beautiful Anniston, Alabama.
Hey, Clavius, how are you?
I'm doing all right. Congratulations on your one-year anniversary.
Oh, thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Great. I was calling to kind of weigh in on the 9/11 events that happened 10 years ago.
Okay, talk a little
and,
bit about that.
I can remember I was basically sleeping. I was working at Fox 6 at the time, and I got a call from my news director, and he says, "Do you know what happened? You know what just happened?" I said, "No." He said, "Turn your TV on." I flipped the TV on, and so he said that America is under attack. From there, he said, get ready, come on to work, and head out to the Anniston Army Depot, where we have the chemical weapons and incinerator.
Mm.
That was another target that we were concerned about, you know, because we stockpile several weapons that are currently being destroyed. So went out to the depot, and they had the facility on lockdown and high security. Armed guards were standing at the gate with M16s. And so it was just a lot of panic, you know, what's next? Are they going to drop a bomb out of the sky on an incinerator? And then, you know, thousands of Anniston and Calhoun County residents would have to evacuate, you know. And so that was one of the concerns we had. And I was really just in a state of shock to see that when the second plane hit, you know, and say, okay, what's really going on, you know. And that's... It was like somebody's just really mad at the United States for some apparent reason, but we just didn't know. But that wasn't even the first attempt to try to – I think they had a truck bomb they had parked under one of the buildings,
mm-hmm,
I think,
mm-hmm,
in New York at one time, in one of the tunnels. Was it Timothy McVeigh they arrested or something like that on that?
I believe so.
Yeah,
what?
Yeah. So, I mean,
so
a lot of our terrorism acts are coming from within our own, you know – ranks now in America, you know. Well, some of them were, you know.
So why do you think people are so angry, or why do you think these terrorists, you know, wanted to get at the United States in that fashion?
There's I have a couple of different theories on that, and one of them is some of the, I guess, the United States for so many years has been the United, the world policeman.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when you go into their home turf and you go to protect a certain interest, they automatically, a lot of times, they'll get kind of feisty about it. And after a certain amount of time, they're like, okay, well, we can do the same thing to you guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which brings up another interesting point. Why is our economy suffering the way it is now? Well, the media will tell us a lot of times on TV, hey, the United States just levels sanctions against China or Iraq, embargoes, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We never hear of the United States having embargoes, levies, or whatever it is, sanctions levied against us.
Interesting.
Does that happen? I'm sure it does. Are we feeling, mm-hmm, some of those effects now when other countries won't trade with us? Yes.
Interesting point. Interesting point.
Yeah. And another thing I'd bring up as far as while we're talking on the economy and how it's – and I think that's – it's with this – what 10 years – it's been 10 years that we've had troops over there in Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Afghanistan. Really, they're just slowly sucking the financial stability. They have sucked the financial stability out of our country with the large-scale, I guess, war over there, you know, resources and everything. So – and poor Obama, he's getting the brunt end of it, of our so-called, to speak, our airplane crashing, because any way he moves to try to get us back on track in the next 10 years or so, it's always overruled.
Absolutely.
By the guys on the hill. Simple.
Absolutely.
Thing. All they would have to do is get a professor from a class or a professor from three universities, Yale, Harvard, it doesn't matter, three of them, independent studies. We do have debt consolidation or debt relief, toll-free numbers, we can call, that we see on TV all the time to get our families out of ruts and financial binds.
Mm-hmm.
They plug in the numbers for the United States, what's going in, what's being spent, what's coming out. Those three professors and universities could probably spit out a doggone proposal within maybe a day or so, and they could probably present it to Congress.
Yep.
How to get America out of it. You get three different independents, I'm sure they'll be kind of similar, but what happens is when it gets to Capitol Hill, everybody says, no, you're not cutting my budget. You can't cut here, you can't cut there. And so where are we at? President Obama looks like a doggone jerk if since his hands are tied.
Right.
And
right.
I'm sure they got enough whizzes up there on Capitol Hill to do those kind of statistical and mathematical equations to figure out how to get us back on track. But will it happen? No. We can do it on our family levels and local levels, but when it comes to our United States doing something that's economically reasonable, tightening the belt on spending and stuff like that, it becomes we're not going to do it because we don't want you in office anyways. We'll just wait.
Awesome.
Till somebody else gets here and give them the same proposal.
Yeah.
You know. But so, that's kind of my thoughts.
I want to piggyback off something you said. Thank you for your call. I want to piggyback on something that that Clay said, and it was basically that the financial situation that we're in because of 9/11. And so, Jim, I want to ask you this question because the Arabic Language Network Al Jazeera released a full transcript about 7 years ago of the most recent videotape at that time from Osama bin Laden, in which he said his group's goal is to force America to bankruptcy. And he said, I quote, "We are continuing his policy in bleeding America to the point of bankruptcy, Allah willing, and nothing is too great for Allah," bin Laden said in the transcript. So, Jima, I want to ask you, what do you think? Are we on our way? Did bin Laden reach his goal?
He's close. He's very close. And it's unfortunate that we haven't figured out that it's not each other that we need to have a problem with, but that it's each other that we need to support and work with and not tear down. And so in us tearing down one another based on party lines and color lines, we have allowed our country to be vulnerable to any attack, whether it's another plane, train, automobile, whether it's some coming through the mail, because we've exposed our complete distrust of one another, it's very easy for someone to come in now and infiltrate. And so not only has he was he somewhat successful in getting us to a point of bankruptcy, but he was also successful in getting us to turn against ourselves. So we often talk about how members of certain parties will vote against their own interests. Well, I think as America, we have voted against and have treated each other against our own best interests as it relates to the global world. So we've done our own disservice by doing that. He may have started the ball to roll, but there we played a big part in kicking the can on down the road. So that is one thing that I can say that we have definitely done, is we played a part in that. And so although, like I said, we might not be completely bankrupt, but we need to make that call and find out what we can do to save some stuff.
Okay.
So
the Motor City Maharani, I want you to weigh in on this because Jima talked about this division that we have within the United States and the fact that everybody in the world is already gunning for us, if you will. They already want to defeat America economically, politically, even when we go to go play sports around the world. But and they seem to be more unified when it comes to those type of things. But when it comes to the United States, we're so divided down party lines and about racial barriers. Will
That's
we
right.
ever be able to come together and rise above any of that again?
Yes, and back to what you were saying, Patrick. Yes, I feel that bin Laden did say that his destiny was to destroy the American economy, but the American economy was on its way anyway because we had already imported numerous job venues across the seas. So we were on our way in the first place, and what he did was push in full throttle modus operandi to further damage the economy because the World Trade Center represented the very economic basis of this country. But then my most major concern with all that was the fact that we didn't go after Osama bin Laden. 2 years before that, he and George W. Bush and his entire family were on a luxury liner, toasting champagne, well wishes, laughing and talking. Then all of a sudden, this man becomes a prolific scapegoat, the maniacal mind behind 9/11. And not only did George Bush fail to just impinge upon the factor of seeking this man out with a seek and destroy mission, but they knew that he was already hiding in the mountains of Afghanistan as a scapegoat. You know, most maniacally and most definitely, he went after his number one nemesis, which was Saddam Hussein for Iraqi oil. So I never understood what was the collaboration, what was the connectivity factor in going after, not after Osama bin Laden, but after Saddam Hussein. This edged us into a further economic destructive mechanism because we began a war literally of no resolve, in which we knew that the Ba'ath Party, under the directives of Saddam Hussein, was the totalitarian movement in that country. And one thing that a couple of the citizens said, and even my friend that works with Al Jazeera, stated that even though he was a mean and cruel man in many ways, at least we had the base level, you know, anomalies of life. But once, you know, George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, he saw it as a money-making venue, and they went and sought and destroyed the country of Iraq, mainly to gain Iraqi oil and to dethrone Saddam Hussein. You know, the mainstay was that this was a war of no resolve in which the people, it was their decisive measure as to whether or not they wanted this man ousted. So when America went into Iraq, you know, a lot of the people within the Arab Emirates, within the Arab world, even all around the world, began to take a totally different look at America as being a big bully on the block, as opposed to being a friendly ally in a centralized world power that it once had been highly respected and regarded as a force to be reckoned with. So we made a lot of enemies through the Bush administration and the Cheney connection. And what we've got to do through our new president, Barack Obama, we've got to rebuild those relationships, you know, realign those areas of trust, and to get ourselves in a far better light. So, you know, it's going to be a long time coming, but slowly but surely I think we will recover and we will rise above the ashes just like the Phoenix. But we don't want to be regarded as the bully. We want to be regarded as a friendly, loving nation that is not afraid to stand up, because these colors will never run.
Awesome. We're going to take a quick break, but we're going to continue the conversation about 9/11. I want to know, when we come back from the break, has America changed? You know, out of all of the things that happened over the last 10 years, did we learn anything? Did we get better? We used to have racial profiling with African Americans, and now it seems like it shifted a little bit to more Arab Americans. And so I want to know, have we learned anything? Have we grown from this activity? Are we safer? When we return, we're going to take your calls and get you to weigh in on this very issue. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be right back. Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number to call is 323-580-5712.
5712. We're talking about September the 11th, 2001. 10 years ago, of course, there was an attack on the Twin Towers, and then there was also attacking on the Pentagon as well as some other places out in New York City. And so we want to talk about, we want to take a look back. And so I want to pose a question. And Jim, I want you to field this question. Is, are we safer now?
Well, you know, that's relative. We thought we were safe then. So I don't know if we're safer because it's relative. It depends on the individual and whether or not, you know, you feel like things are at a stand, you know, at a even keel point. I think, you know, we put a lot of emphasis on being safe, and I think we wasted a lot of money on safety because a lot of things, as I stated, we thought we were safe before, you know. There was no – and then a lot of things that normally happen when some of the things was happening that these people did, how they came over and paid for classes with cash and took their flight classes this kind of way and the neighborhoods they was living in. Normally, you know, those sorts of things bring out some sort of suspicion, especially the amount of cash they were using. And so for those little safety mechanisms that were there that were not adhered to, is how we ended up with some of the devastation that we have. So I don't know if we're safer or not. I mean, I stand in line longer at security. Okay. My address and my birthday has to match, you know, whatever. And so there's a lot of things we've done, but I don't know if it has anything to do with making us safer. We spent a lot of money, though. And if we could get some of that money back, you know, we might not be in such an economic, you know, distress we're in. But I don't know if we're safer.
Okay. I'm going to take another call. This caller, last four, is 0497. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hi, Pat. This is Rosalind Moore calling from Montgomery, Alabama. How are you?
Absolutely wonderful, Rosalind. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I actually want to kind of agree with the last caller that at one point before we thought we were safe, but over the last 10 years, I think what has happened is we've become more successful at being paranoid.
I like that.
We've become more successful at being paranoid. As she stated, you know, we stand in lines longer for security, and then you're wondering what's going on. So some things have improved, but still overall we've become more successful at being scared. We're scared to do anything now. Before, we were more carefree. Now we're just, you know, what's going to happen? You know, can we do this or can we do that?
Now, Rosalind, this week we've had a lot of people on the news say, you know, there's an imminent attack has been confirmed but not verified, and they've been using this type of language about how these activities has that put you in that same state of mind since they're wrapping up this type of conversation again?
What the language that they're using?
Yes, yes.
Well, in a way, you know, I guess so, because I've heard the same thing, too. There was supposed to be some attacks in New York and Washington, D.C. this year, you know, today because of the anniversary and everything. But so far, nothing has happened. So still, you know, people are scared and wondering what's going on. I mean, it's been 10 years. And, you know, just like was stated on the news Thursday, you know, we've had this span and, you know, they've had a few threats and so forth, and nothing's come through. But, of course, we don't want to have our guard down and not think that they wouldn't attack again.
Right.
But, you know, also on that hand, you know, if they do attack, how do we protect ourselves? Because we've sent most of our troops overseas to, you know, be involved in something, and we've basically left our back door wide open.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. All right. Thank you for your call. We're going to take another call here. This caller, last 41348. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Elaine Collins. I'm calling from Wiley, Texas. Hi, Patrick. Happy anniversary.
Hey, Elaine. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Well, what I wanted to say, what we were doing on September 11, I believe we were just waking up, and I thought I was watching a movie. You know, I was in disbelief.
Mike.
But,
don't you? Yep.
Uh-huh. But, you know, and I thought, right, my eyes were like, oh, Lord, what's going on? But, you know, because I was in church today, my pastor kind of brought up a point. He stated that on September 11th, you know, with all the political things that are going on now, he was like, can you remember September the 11th? He said, everybody came together. You couldn't tell a Republican, you couldn't tell a Democrat, you couldn't tell a whatever the other, independent.
Mm-hmm.
They were all together. But now, 10 years later, we're all so divided. And that was just a point that I wanted, you know, to bring up.
Well, thank you for your call. You know, Jima, you mentioned this a few moments ago about the fact that there was, you know, that division that we have in the United States, and it's so much so that we can't really concentrate or focus on what's happening outside our borders, let alone what's inside our borders. Therefore, we can't come together economically to correct all the things that we have going on in the country. We can't pass a jobs bill. Where do we go from here? Can we use today, Jima, as a point in time that we can begin the healing process and the coming together for America?
Well, the only way you can begin to heal, you first have to admit that you are ill. So until America and all of her citizens come together and admit that we do have a problem with one another based on race, based on religion, based on culture, based on gender, based on sexual orientation, based on zip code, until we admit that these issues do exist, then you cannot begin to heal. The first step is to admit you have a problem. And we admit that everybody else has a problem. It's not me, it's my neighbor. It's not me, it's the Republicans. It's not me, it's the Democrats. We can admit and find issues across the line, but can we hold up the mirror, as Michael Jackson would say, and look at the person in the mirror and say, okay, what can I do to help move something forward? And until we do that with one another, with ourselves, we will not truly heal. You may feel better. You know how you go to the doctor and you get a prescription and you fill the prescription and you're supposed to take it for 10 days, but by day two you really start to feel better, so you don't take it anymore. So you think you're okay. You think you're healed. And then something happens. A gust of cold wind comes through. And, boy, you feel worse the next time than you did the last time. Well, you didn't do what you were supposed to do. You didn't finish the prescription. You didn't take all of the medicine. You had the prescription, you had the diagnosis, but then you didn't follow through on it. And that's where we are right now in America. We know exactly what it is we need to do because we've had too many forums, too many commissions, too many reports. Even as it relates to how we deal with terrorism, there are still things that have been suggested that we do as a country that we are failing to do, even from the 911 commission report. Now, what kind of sense does that make? So we know, based on the report, that there's some things we could be doing and that we should be doing differently, but we are refusing to do it. So we don't really want to get well. We don't really want to come together. We want to talk about it because it sounds good and it makes you feel good for the moment. But it's not going to take us to the level that we need to get to. So, you know, we can talk about healing and all of those wonderful buzzwords and whatnot, but we have to admit we have a problem first, and we have yet to do that.
You know, I like that because of the fact that when you look at our placement in math and science compared to all other countries internationally. When you look at the fact that our debt is rapidly approaching our gross domestic product, then it turns out that if we do look into the mirror, we will find that we're not all that well. We are really sick.
Right.
And so, Evan, weigh in on where you think we are, and how do we begin to start the healing process?
You know something, we have to go back to base level one, self-assessment and evaluation. Number one is this. You know, and even when I consider what happened, it was horrific, it was tragic. But when I look at the timelines, and I have some specific information, if you would allow me to share very briefly with you and the listening audience, Patrick, I would really be delighted to do that. And I'll kind of build my point upon what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
This is some interesting information that never made the mainstream media, and I was telling you about how CNN blundered on the amount of people that were on the air flights. It was totalitarianly so terrible what they did. This is the first thing that really got me at 12:45 a.m., 45 minutes after midnight. William Brown, the mayor of San Francisco, gets a call from what he described as his airport security advising that Americans should be cautious about their travel on September the 11th. Mayor Brown was scheduled to fly from San Francisco to New York on September the 11th. At 6 o'clock a.m., and this is what got me, a van occupied by Middle Eastern men pulls up to the Colony Beach and Tennis Resort on Long Boat Key, Florida. They must have known that President Bush was there. They are turned away for not having an appointment because they stated they wanted to see him. 6:30 a.m., Bush goes for a four-mile jog along the golf course of the beach. 2 hours before the attack, two workers of the instant messaging company, O2G, received messages warning of the World Trade Center attack. So at 6:45 a.m. in the morning, they were warned that the World Trade Center was going to be attacked. This Israel-owned company has its headquarters two blocks from the World Trade Center. At 6:50 a.m., Muhammad Ali and Abdullah Olomari flight from Portland, Maine, arrives at the Boston's Logan Airport. Now, here is the strange thing behind that. With all of this intelligence and all that getting, get an understanding, you know, how would you say, successful and positive communications can definitely supersede negative plots and ploys. Where was the communications piece? Why wasn't this base-level information, number one, connected back to the CIA, to the FBI, and other operatives of the military that something was going to happen? This happened, I mean, literally 6 to 7 hours before the actual attacks. Then we look at the miscommunications of NORAD. You know, here they are ready to do an interception 10 minutes before the first plane hits the South Tower of the World Trade Center. Then simultaneously, so then the other flight hits the, you know, the North Tower. What I'm hitting at right here and now, would like to go more in depth if you'll let me do later on in the program. I know you have other areas to discuss. Where is the connectivity of communication? This is what failed us. The lack of sufficient communication, the evidence of no apparent connectivity in the communication, and the clarity of the information as it relates to the communication. Communication is the foundational piece in any degree of relationship, whether it's interpersonal, extrapersonal, political, religious, educational, and you have to connect with people. This country has yet to understand the fundamental aspects, the overall importance of connecting information, connecting the dots. Look at World War II, and I know we're going back there again, December 7, 1941. What was the three code words that the Japanese used, the land of the rising sun? Tora, Tora, Tora. By the time that this information got to where it was supposed to have gotten to, the young man played with it. He said it didn't mean anything. That communication went in the garbage. What happened? Pearl Harbor got attacked. So America needs to be more vigilant as it relates to intelligence and information and to communicate this information, you know, to all components, whether it's to the military, to the law enforcement agencies, to the communities, to the local policing agencies. We need to get this information because being in the know saves lives. And, you know, it reduces the level of casualties. And until we get to that point and get back to communication, you can build up the military all you want to. You can do the community policing. You can buy all the arsenal. But if you don't communicate, you don't have the instructional guidelines and the peripheral mechanisms to make anything happen. So this country needs to be more communicable and get that information out and take all threats as an actual attempt on everybody's life.
Awesome. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. The chat room is on fire. Get out there to the chat room. And if you want to talk, if you want to call in, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Again, the number is 323-580-5712. Press 1, and I'll be sure to get you in. So I want to go back again in this commemoration to 9/11 and talk about the fact that we are, you know, how has America changed? I want to ask that simple question, how has America changed? Because we know that Roslyn talked about earlier about we before 9/11 on September 10th, we were kind of willy-nilly and kind of happy-go-lucky. But after September the 11th, we were fear-struck. We were fear-stricken, if you will. We were concerned about our everyday activity. We were looking over our shoulders more. So, Jim, I wanted you to start a conversation out a little bit. How has America changed?
Well, as I stated earlier, you know, I think we spend a lot of money to make us feel like we're safer, but I'm not, you know, real sure that we are. I think we've I don't necessarily know if the change we've made has been good change in its totality, in terms of how we view one another. Every, you know, the language that comes out as it relates to Muslims is all most of the time is negative. And they're, you know, they're lumped into one big category, much like they do black people, lump us in one big category. And you know, there's no lack of black profile, and I can tell you that. They still profile black people, too. So, you know, and they become very, you know, in certain parts, people are use it as an excuse to treat you bad or to mistreat you based on what they think they know about you because of what you look like. And so I don't know if that's, you know, I don't know. That has not been a change for the better. I think what it shows during this time is that, you know, there's a point where we can come together. It showed us that we can work together, that we can agree on some things, that we may not know exactly where the ride is going to take us, but I trust you. There was a moment of trust. Right after 9/11, in terms of we believed in government. We don't believe in government anymore. We don't believe government can do anything anymore. And so maybe it was that blind belief where we just kind of trusted government, and maybe we trusted government, you know, too much, that we didn't hold it completely accountable because of that trust. So, but it showed us that we can work together. But at the end of the day, I'm just not sure that all the changes that we've undergone as a nation has been for our growth and development.
Okay, we're going to go back to the phone lines. Right now we're going to take a call, and caller last four, 6267. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Give us your name and where you're calling from.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, what's up, Pat?
Hey, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Leroy. I'm from California.
Hey.
I'm from Maywood.
Okay.
Well, you know, we were talking about how America has changed, right?
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to keep it real, right? People just ain't American anymore, man. It's really making me mad. I'm out here in Maywood. I saw him the other day on the news. You know, people were talking about Cat Williams. He was out in Arizona. I don't know if you heard about this. But he made fun of some Mexicans. Did you hear about that?
Yep, I heard about it. Uh-huh.
Well, I'm just going to say, as an American, he's right. Don't you think? The lack of patriotism in this country. I'm out here from Maywood. You know, there's a lot of Mexican flags here. You know, I see them up on government buildings. I've seen them up on, right? I'm like, this is a little bit ridiculous. You know, they're out here, you know, wrecking another country, you know. Excuse my language, but get the fuck back over there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, our young ones, you know, they're just, look, let me give you an example.
Okay.
I woke up this morning, right, and my next door neighbors happen to be Mexican, and they left me a note on my porch, right, and it just infuriated me. I couldn't really take it. They left the bait. It said, all your base are belong to us, or something like that. It was really poorly written, really poorly written. You know, and they were pretty much, you know, celebrating last night 9/11. I couldn't believe it. I could not believe it. I just don't know what to do.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you for your call. We're gonna take another call here. We're gonna take a caller from last four is 4349. 4349. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Where are you calling? What's your name? And where are you calling from?
Hey, this is David right here calling from Michigan. How you doing, bud? How you doing?
Wonderful, David.
Hey, man, just it's so deep, the events, man. I was actually in New York at the time. You hear me, bro?
Okay.
I was actually in Bayview Penitentiary at the time. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Oh, I got caught up, you know, couldn't pay my child support, and I was in jail. I was in, you know, an island, like we'd be talking, like, about 20 miles away, and I can still hear the floor, like, if I felt this shake, all right, you hear me?
Wow.
I just knew something was up, and, you know, I looked through the bars, and I just see these two buildings just smoking. I was so crazy, man. Oh, goodness. But, luckily, only 30 days in jail, I was able to walk out, and, oh, man, I'm still getting a little emotional just thinking about it, and just my emotional state, just, oh, God, I almost cry right now.
Wow.
You know.
So did you lose anybody during that time?
No, well, luckily, you know, I still feel for the survivors, you know. I did some stupid shit again, you know, smoked some weed on a plane, you know, 100
mm-hmm.
niggas, you know, just letting pay the game. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I pop up in jail again, bro. I don't know what's up with that, you know. You know, just eating cheese pizza.
Right,
eating
right,
cheese
right.
Eating pizza that great.
Right. Right, right, understand. All right, well, thank you for your call. So as you can see, people from all over the country was touched by the events of September 11th and the fact that, you know, everybody has an experience. You know, this is your where are you moment. And as you can hear the callers talk about their emotions and how it changed their lives and the fear that it possesses. And so I'm just glad that, you know, we do take an opportunity every now and then to take a look back. But at the same time, as I mentioned earlier, you know, I really don't want to have Americans always spend so much time looking back. I would like to more or less look forward. And in looking forward, I want to talk about another topic that is really, really important to me, and that was the president address that he made the joint session of Congress this week. Now, he talked about the actual his American Job Act. So, Abby, I'm going to get you to weigh in on the American Job Act first of all. What did you think about his speech?
I thought it was wonderful. It was awesome, and it couldn't have came at a better time. Kind of distracted some of the momentum from the 9/11 anniversary. I thought it was very good. How well it was delivered, it was awesome to me. But how well it was received, that's rather questionable, because the first thing that the Republican right-wing extremists are saying, he's saying it out of his mouth. Where is it on the paper? It's got to go through Congress. It's got to go through the House of Representatives. He's presented nothing. That's the biggest argument that they have. And, you know, and I have an issue with that. Even so, right here in the Democratic Party, you've got some of the so-called self-proclaimed, quote-unquote, we not blue dogs that have the same analogy. My thing is this. Once again, concentrating on what is more crucial mental to this country. Is it attacking the president, or is it working a networking, a plan that is strategic, outlined, and is really going to build the job basis back here in this country? And my mainstay has always been, and, you know, he said a little bit, he should have said a lot more about getting those jobs that were outsourced overseas back here on the American soil. And I wish more, you know, information was projected as to how we're going to do that and more strategic outlines as to how we're going to get those outsourced jobs back here, because that's the mainstay of things. And, you know, once again, I keep saying this, but we're fighting still a war over there in Iraq, a war of no apparent resolve. As somebody said, it's the everlasting war that with no peaceable means of ending, you know, and those elements like that, you know, which also drain the country even more so, you know, astronomically than ever. But the mainstay is to get those jobs back to where they belong, in the very lives, the very frontiers of the American people. And that's the mainstay of the things that have really hurt us. You know, look at China now, has risen to literally become the technological basis of Asia. It was once Japan until the tsunami hit. Now China is impinging upon, you know, the technological market, and they're really advanced. So the hottest commodity in the commercialized market now, for what we know as educators, is technology. We do our lesson plans on technology. We teach from technology. You know, everything that we do, our staff meetings are technologically based. So I think if they get that whole component of technology back here in the United States of America, and I wish you really went into that area, we're going to see a great turnaround in the job market, and, you know, to open up training venues and programs where there's, you know, the world to work plan has really been successful, even with our students, to get them into these fields, because they're very highly demanded. And, you know, my mainstay, once again, is getting that technological base. And I think that's the best way. You know, commercialized businesses, they can pretty much so run operatively so, but the mainstay is getting those jobs back here that are the technological basis. And that's why I think he really, really should have stuck into it.
Jimmy, what do you think about the speech he made this week? Do you think it kind of hit home, or he still got a lot of work to do?
Oh, the speech I think was awesome. It hit all the high points for me. He talked about what it was he wants to see, and it's almost like he called them out and dared them not to pass it. You know how I took it. You know, pass this jobs bill. You know, they ran on jobs, and that's how they convinced people to vote for him back in November of last year.
Mm-hmm.
They came into the House, and here we are in September, and they have yet to present one jobs bill since they've been there. But they've done a lot of things to try to eliminate my rights as a woman, but they've done little to help employ me as a woman. So I think he was right on point with his tone. I thought it was an excellent delivery, which he does that oftentimes, but for some reason I felt a little different. I felt a little different this time, though, because I was just not – I didn't psych myself up for a great speech because I didn't want to be disappointed. So the fact that he delivered a great speech, you know, exceeded my expectations, because I did not expect him to come off as strong as he did. Last week we talked about whether or not, you know, he was how would we rate him in terms of his strength or weakness, and I think he came off very strong Thursday night.
Mm-hmm.
Not only to Congress, but to the American people. He came out very strong and forthright and ready to work, ready to roll up his sleeves and do what he has to do to get the job done.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. It seems to be a consensus from all the reporting that I was fortunate to witness that the president did an excellent job. He had all of the key critical points. He also put into this particular proposal things that Democrats and Republicans had, you know, had talked about before. So my question to you, Jima, will the Republicans go for this particular proposal?
Well, they're going to have to do something, and they're already talking about that they can't do all of it. Well, they have to say that to save face, because they've been so anti this president since they came into office. So they can't say that this is a good jobs bill and we can rally around that, because that would mean that they're going to work with him. So they have to create some sort of imaginary roadblock, much like he talked about these imaginary crises that wasn't crisis until they made it be a crisis. So, you know, they will do enough to maybe quiet down some of their own constituents, because they're now feeling the heat from their base, from their people that are voting, about some of the things that has not happened, excuse me, since they've been in charge of the House. And so there's some accountability here now You can't just be anti-Obama. You need to have a plan. And so if he's presenting one that hits all of the bells and whistles, it's something that, that both parties in previous administrations have agreed to before, and most of them people there have been there for a long time. So some of them have already signed off on some of these things. You would think it would go okay, but it's because it's him, it's not going to.
Okay. Now, so what about the Tea Party? Republican Party is really a party that's kind of, you know, has a foundation. The Tea Party is something that's really kind of usurping all of the things that the president is doing right now. They're kind of taking control and changing the conversation, redirecting with these smoke screens. How do you think the Tea Party is going to respond to this, Abby?
Well, you know something, you know, once again, everybody's looking to do their own rubber stamp, do their own self-proclaimed agenda. I think they're going to fight against it, just as they did with the health care reform bill. They're going to fight against it, try to tweak it, water it down where it makes their party look good, and finally, once it's watered down and condensed, literally to not condensed soup, but to bouillon, where you can see right through it, it's transparency, then finally they'll present it and then approve it. They're always going to try to put in their bid so that they can, you know, maintain their equilibrium as being a strong force to be reckoned with this president. Because I don't think it's just so much the bill of what he's talking about creating jobs. It's him that they're attacking. And I think with the American public looking out the very front window, 20 million Americans that are yet unemployed, they're going to have to do something in desperate measure, because certainly they want their man, Rick Perry, to be a top runner. So I think he's going to really take the formidable part in the platform and make it look like he's the man that made it happen, that the president was just merely a messenger boy carrying out his commands.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Rick Perry. Now, they had the Republican debate last week, and clearly Rick Perry was a front runner. Clearly he did the best in the debate. Gene, what do you think?
Yep. I'm not going to say clearly. Because I'm not completely sold on Rick Perry. I think he's a.
Me neither.
I think there's a mirage there somewhere. You know, I don't think, you know, I don't think it's all what we see. You know, and but you know, he's a performer. He performed well that night. But I think, you know, him and Mitt Romney, they basically, everybody else was non-existent. Michelle Bachmann, Ron Paul, Herman Cain, really? I mean, really? Newt Gingrich, really? I mean, everybody else is just, you know, they're completely background singers, complete background,
yep,
like behind the curtain.
Yep.
So when you look at Mitt Romney and you look at Rick Perry, you know, they took their shots at each other, and that's good. That's what they're supposed to do. If, you know,
yep,
if they really want it, they're going to have to play and sometimes hit below the belt. But, you know, Rick Perry got a lot of questions he got to answer to in terms of how he really did business in Texas. And he hasn't been completely vetted nationally. And there was some lazy, in my opinion, journalism down here in Texas, or some things would have probably come out during this last election cycle when he got reelected. But no, nobody had the fortitude to dig deep enough. So I think, you know, he'll come out. Probably, unless there's a big, big, major, you know, snafu somewhere. But I it'll be between him and Mitt Romney. I would like to see which one of them, whoever gets it, who they pick for their vice president. That's what I want to see.
All right, we're gonna go back to the phone lines. All right, Bilbo. It seems like you got Frodo Bilbo. You probably be calling from Skype. What's your name?
Where you calling from? Talk to me.
Say again?
Sir Joe Smith.
You have a comment?
Sir Joe Smith. 1,000 past my final offer.
Okay, I can't really understand him, but we're gonna move on. Abby, we're gonna move on to our next caller. We're gonna take a call from last 4-8-1-6-0. You have a comment or a question?
Hello. Yeah, I got a comment.
Go ahead.
Yeah, well, check this out. What's up, Pat, first off? What's up, Pat?
How you doing?
You know, I was watching the 9/11 memorials this morning, and I tuned into some other radio shows, and I heard about this. I don't know if you guys knew this, but there was this kid that used to play, like, the piano outside the World Trade Centers. I don't know if you guys ever heard about that.
Mm-mm.
He was autistic, and he used to play the piano outside the World Trade Center. And I was like, wow, that's really touching. He, you know, first, you know, people with autism.
Right.
You know, for them to be able to do that, that's amazing.
Absolutely.
You know, and they
Absolutely.
Even had a video of the guy, and it was just, it was incredible.
Wow.
It was incredible. I recommend you guys all check that out.
Okay. All right. We'll all do right. that. Thank you for
well,
your call.
Hold on a sec. I want to make a comment about Obama. I really don't understand what all the hate is. I mean, you know, we got people in the Democratic Party that don't really favor even Democrats. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like suddenly, like they're how can I explain this? Like they're going against their brethren. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, we need to, you know how the Republicans, when they want to do something, they all do it, right?
Right, right, right. They all have the same message. They all
exactly,
have the same talking
exactly.
points. Uh-huh.
You know, and to be honest, we, as Democrats, you know, I'm a Democrat, we all have the numbers to
okay.
definitely overpower the Republican Party, right?
Right.
And it's like something needs to happen. Look at our current president. I guarantee you if we would have had more favor in the House, you know, we could have definitely turned things around, you know.
Mhm. Mhm.
And it's just how are you guys just going to go and just we need to be allied, we need to be focused. You know, we need to, you know, hit the ground running, you know what I mean?
Right.
We need to, you know, fuck some shit up. You know, we need to do some shit for real. I mean,
okay.
it's like a playground out there. We're not doing anything. Before I go, just want to give a shout out, definitely to that autistic kid. You know, he died in the attack.
Mm-hmm.
It was really touching. A shout out to you.
Okay.
Everybody else there, and that's it. Peace, my brothers.
All right, that was a pretty awesome call. So Jimmy, what do you think? Moving back to the what he said about the president and the fact that the Democrats really don't get together like the Republicans. The Republicans always come out and show a united front. I guarantee you, all of the bickering and all of the fussing and fighting that's going on now within the Republican Party for especially around before the primaries. Once they select a candidate, they're gonna throw all of their forces and money behind this person. So why can't the Democrats do that, Jimmy?
Well, I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. I don't necessarily
okay.
know if I agree with that. And I say that because some of their views are so far from the average person that the party will have to make a decision. And so there's already been some splitting in terms of where they're putting their monies at right now. And so I don't know. I mean, you're probably right that eventually they'll put their money behind them, but somebody might decide to break off and run as an independent. Who knows with those people where their minds might go. But I think he's right in terms of, and we've stated this before, that the Democrats, several things, that they can't seem to stay on message, let alone get a message. And they come out and they sometimes attack the president unnecessarily. And I think a lot of it, honestly, is so that it doesn't appear that they're giving him any slack because he's the first African-American president. So let's make sure that we treat him just like we would treat any other president. The problem with that is that you're not treating him like you treat any other president.
Mm-hmm.
Because I can't say in my lifetime that I know of a time that the president called for a meeting with the joint Congress and people didn't go. I was waiting for the media to show me an instance when George Bush did it or Bill Clinton did it, when they had a joint session and members of Congress didn't show, because I wanted to be able to say, oh, it's not just because it's Obama. But nobody gave me that. So, and I haven't researched it. I guess I will now that I brought it up. But I was waiting on somebody to show me that other members of Congress in the past have not gone to a joint session called by the president. So that in itself tells us what we're dealing with. So, you know, we don't expect those people to do anything but what they're doing. But when you look at your own party and you have to second-guess your own members of your party, that's what's making the president's job hard, his own party. The Republicans are going to give you what they give you because that's who they are. But when you look at your party, your family, your people, and they're mistreating you like that, That's what's causing the most confusion and heartache as it relates to how we move forward.
Okay. All right, we're going to go back to our phone lines now. We're going to take another call. This caller, last 4444. Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's up, Pat? This is here, David again. Wanted to give another shout-out. You know, what's up, Pat? How you doing, bro? You know,
all right, David.
Tonight, you know? You know what I say, baby? You know what's up? You know what's up? You know, but, you know, I just want to give a shout-out. I know my baby mama, Chandra, out there, you know, she pressing me for that child support, but fuck that nigga, man. Fuck that nigga. I see you out there, nigga.
All right. So, you know, every now and then you get a few callers in like that, so I apologize to all the listeners out there that are listening to that, but for the most part, we're going to continue the conversation. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I am going to shift the conversation on this ABC special report that's going to be coming up, and I wanted to get to this before we ran out of time, because I think this is going to be going to open some eyes to some people, and I'm going to actually talk a little bit about Jackie Kennedy's comments that she made about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I want you to stay tuned. I want you to hear these comments. What you hear is going to be pretty shocking. All right, you're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. We'll be right back. Need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gema, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Gema. And Ask Gema says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my eighth.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. And we got a few, this is our last segment, and I wanted to talk a little bit about, before we ran out of time, about this ABC special that will be airing on September the 13th. Now, viewers will hear the former First Lady with historian Arthur Schlesinger, Jr., about life in the White House and with her husband, President John F. Kennedy. Of course, I'm talking about Jacqueline Kennedy here. Now, the recordings were made months after the president's 1963 assassination and were sealed until now. Now, originally planned for 1 hour, the special will fill 2 hours in prime time and feature Diane Sawyer's interview with their daughter, Carolyn Kennedy. Now, here's what Politico had to say about what she talked about. They said Jacqueline Kennedy expressed disdain for Martin Luther King Jr. on newly released tapes recordings, saying she couldn't look at a picture of him without thinking, that man's terrible. Kennedy called King a phony and tricky, doing hours of chatty, never-before-revealed interviews with the historian Arthur Schlesinger that he taped, recorded. Now, the interviews took place in 1963, shortly after Kennedy had been assassinated. The former First Lady said on the tapes that King had made derogatory remarks about her husband's funeral and the cardinal who celebrated Mass at the event, according to the report on the tapes by the Associated Press. Now, according to ABC, which has obtained the audio tapes and is hosting a two-hour Jackie Kennedy special on September the 13th, the former First Lady said King had arranged for an orgy in the hotel while in town for the March on Washington in 1963. Now, Kennedy said that her husband, President John F. Kennedy, had urged her not to be judgmental about it. Now, there were some other things that she said on the tapes, too. She said, Jacqueline Kennedy also said that the president was anxious to dump FBI Chief J. Edgar Hoover. The former lady's First Lady said her husband openly ridiculed the notion of Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson succeeding him as president. And there was a lot of other things. So, first up, I want to ask this simple question. Abby, what do you make of her comments about Dr. King?
So the demeanor of the First Lady at that time didn't even seem reflective of those kinds of comments. I'm a little bit apprehensive because, you know, this is definitely recorded on tape, so apparently she made those statements. My question is, what were the true reasons as to why she made these character assassinations against Dr. Martin Luther King? You know, hell has no fury than a woman scorned. We know that. And apparently she just did not care for him, you know, whether it was because he was a man of African-American ethnicity, whether she didn't like the stature that he took, or maybe perhaps there had been some degree of difficulty as it related to maybe the relationship that he and her husband had had. There's probably many reasons and causation factors as to why she would make that statement, but it's a little bit off-center, despite what he did in his private life, which never became public and apparent, because trust me, if J. Edgar Hoover would have got that information, it would have been front and center. Every major news syndicate in this country and around the world would have had it. Even so, if he did it, and his wife, apparently, you know, women, we have that ability to be telekinetic and know when something is not right in our relationship when we're linked and involved with someone. If she didn't go public, Coretta Scott King, and make any mention of it or show any degree of disparagingness or disharmony, why was she so concerned with it? Was it to the fact that perhaps her husband may have been included in the orgy, or was it to the point where that this was another attempt of character assassination based upon mere hearsay? My thing is, and all you're getting, get understanding, but also provide the evidence and the apparent facts when it relates to making statements like that. So I think people are going to listen to it. They're going to be shocked and surprised, but nevertheless, they're just simply going to dismiss it as something that is of her own opinion with no solid facts involved.
Jimmy, why now, though? I mean, we just had the March on Washington. Well, we tried to have the March on Washington for Jobs a couple of weeks ago.
We just unveiled the memorial for Martin Luther King Jr., Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Why would they be releasing the tapes now?
Well, as I stated in my blog entry this week on this topic, I found it to be extremely odd that now, 50 years later, that it would be coming out. And so what is it going to serve to his children, to her children, that this is how she felt? It just seems kind of unnecessary. I mean, although we have access to certain things, that doesn't mean those things have to be shared. And maybe those are just the most hateful or the most insidious comments that are being leaked out, so it'll intrigue us all to watch it. Because I'm definitely piqued to see what else she had to say now. But I agree that, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, no joke, you know. And it's no secret his mission was to discredit the man. Because discredited the man would mean you can do away with the message. And that's exactly what he wanted to do, was to silence the message. And so at every turn, it appeared as though that was what, you know, his main goal in life was to do that. And now the unfortunate part about it is we keep hearing this every year or every couple years. Somebody writes a book and talks about Dr. King's private life. That he liked to, you know, hang out and do whatever, and, you know, different relationships he may have had on Mrs. King. So every year somebody else there's another story. So at some point, you know, we have to say, will that have an impact on the impact he had on America? And that's where you draw the line at. And I think that's where people will have to make that distinction. It does not negate the fact that everything he did was for the people, regardless of what he had going on in his personal life.
So what I hear then is that perhaps there may be an ulterior motive to bringing this out, as opposed to trying to get the complete story or the complete picture of the man. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of times when you try to have an historical account of an individual's life, you know, you try to get the best part so it can be presented forward. But some historians like to go back and make sure that they get a complete picture of individual is before they can talk about his true legacy. So, Jima, do you think that this is what they're trying to do, trying to get the complete picture of who Dr. King was to see, you know, to really make an assessment about his legacy, or do you think this is something else?
Well, there's two things. One, this is just her perspective in terms of how she felt about him. And everything she's saying is what she said Hoover told her or whatever. So it's still secondhand information. Excuse me. The second part of that is like, as I stated earlier, this isn't some of it. What's new is how she felt. What's not new is that there's been questions about, you know, his lifestyle. That's not new information, and it has done nothing to diminish him as the man and the messenger all this time. You know, what's new is how she felt about him, or what these tapes are saying she felt about him. That's what's the new information. So I have to say once again, what's the purpose of bringing this out 50 years later, and what is it going to serve? And maybe that's just a piece of the tape. Maybe, you know, it's not all about that, but of course that's how they teased us with it in terms of their marketing. But maybe it's going to give us a more in-depth look at her as her tenure in the White House prior to his assassination or afterwards. I don't know. But it just seems odd that it comes up now. It just doesn't seem like it doesn't fit.
It does. You know, it does seem odd. Can I say something real quick along with Sheba? Thank you. What a convenient time. The Martin Luther King Library, you know, the monumental perspective. You know, then look at the Martin Luther King's Day being celebrated across the nation and a black president, Barack Obama. You know, how convenient would that be almost at the time of the election to give a negative report upon strong black leadership? What a good way to do it. By gossip and rumor, that's an effective way.
So Abby, what I hear you saying is that you know, there is some hidden agenda behind releasing it at this time, because it's approaching, you know, it's approaching the re-election season. You have one of the premier African Americans being portrayed in a light that may be questionable. So how is it that we can trust another African American that seems to be questionable?
You got the picture. I saw something in Star Magazine several weeks ago that said that Barack and Michelle had a terrible heated argument. She caught him in the arms of another woman. He was supposed to be invited to some orgy. She walked in. So how convenient. All this kind of twists and turns the same way. Don't get black leadership. They cannot conduct themselves in a moral fashion that is formidable. They're untrustworthy. They lead double lives. They're deceitful. Don't trust the black.
Now, so you think that most people can be able to, Jimmy, most people can know this stuff is crazy, right? I mean, they're not going to buy into this, are they?
Yeah, they're going to buy into it, just like they bought into the fact that the health care was going to kill their grandma. Yeah, they're buying into it. If you hear something enough, you'll start to believe it. And
that's
so, you know, all you're watching is a certain news channel, and that's all they're telling you, you will believe it. It's the same thing with how they view black people in general. You know, the message is that, you know, we don't care about our families, and we don't value education, and we, you know, we just want to get a check, and we just want to be on food stamps. That's the perception. And so there's a lot of people that truly believe that, because that's what they've been told time and time again. So when President Obama, then Senator Obama, announced his candidacy, people was like, hey, you know, who is that type of guy? To the majority of us, it wasn't he was a great speaker. We've heard great speakers all of our lives in the black church.
Mm-hmm.
See, that wasn't what did it for me in terms of the president being able to be that he was so articulate. I've known articulate black people my whole life. But for those people, some of them seen him, and he wasn't a preacher. He wasn't Reverend Jackson. He wasn't Reverend Sharpton. He wasn't a child of the Civil Rights Movement who had all of this other stuff attached to him. He was an Ivy Leaguer. What? So it took them a minute to even wrap their heads around the fact that he could be president and could be a good one. So, yes, they will believe it. They will believe it. They will. You will probably hear about it on the news. Once that show airs on Tuesday, I guarantee you, Wednesday talk show on Rush is going to be out of control. Fox News, oh, my goodness. I might just have to watch it just to see how they spin it. I can't wait.
So you think then that this is going to be the beginning of a wave of media blitz to begin to discredit the king, or are you saying that, or is this an attempt to discredit African American men of leadership?
I think it's a combination, but I don't even think they thought about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not that smart. We give them way too much credit. They're not that smart to come up with what this theory is that we've come up with. They're not that smart.
Yes.
It's for them, it's strictly race. That's all it is. It has to do with all this other stuff that we see it as, because we know it can't just be race all the time. But for them, that's really what it comes down to. So I'm not going to give them that much credit that they will try to use it to discredit, you know, some kind of way, tie the president into it. But they probably will try to tie the president into it, because that's how their mind operates. And, you know, but the sad part about it is that, you know, they have such moral authority when it comes to other people, but they don't have that same moral authority for themselves. And they go out and sleep with whomever and support people that cheated on their wives and hired staffers to cover up stuff. And these are people that are in high-level leadership positions in Congress. But yet, you know, on the other side of the coin, they want to talk about somebody else's moral issues. So it's kind of like, really, I mean, I hope that it doesn't, you know, become bigger than what it is. But I'm just suspect that 50 years later, we want to hear some tapes from Jackie Kennedy about Martin Luther King. And why was that the part that was leaked, that the part about Martin Luther King? If they
That's
got all
right.
these tapes, why was that the part that, well, I wouldn't say leaked, but that why was that the teaser? Because
mm-hmm.
we like
his monument was celebrated. That's right, because his monument.
Right, right.
Too much
right.
recognition
and we like
for a black
to see,
man.
We
too
like
much.
To see a black man fall. Not
that's
a week,
it. That's
but
it.
They like to
Bottom
see
line.
A black man taking down a pig. So, you know, so, I mean, because I'm
right.
sure she talked about a lot of stuff. So why is that the teaser? That's my question.
Thank
why was
you.
That the teaser?
That's right. Too much black. No slack with the black. You white, you're all right.
Mm. well, let me say this. You know, what I was hoping that people would talk about was the fact that that J. Edgar Hoover had a vendetta against the king, and so any mm-hmm. kind of information or any kind of intel that was given by him should have been discredited. Because
right. That's right.
He had an agenda.
But he was a girly boy.
You know, he had an agenda, and he also wanted to take the king down for whatever reason. Well, I don't know what his rationale was for, but there were
he
records.
He said that he was a communist. He wasn't
yeah.
because he was black. He said he was a communist. It wasn't because he was black. And that was the story. No one tried to take him down, and he was a homosexual.
Right. So the fact that he was trying to always discredit the king, I thought it would have been more conversation around him as opposed to the response that Jackie Kennedy gave about what he told her. That's what I was expecting. Not necessary, but as you can see, all of the major news stories are running with the point that her comments against him is what the leaked story is, not the fact that she could have received some bad intel, and that's what my point is.
I agree with that, but like you stated, though, like you said, J. Edgar Hoover, anything he said should have been discredited, but it wasn't.
That's right.
And he kept
right.
his job. So how did he keep the job anyway? If Kennedy
Thank
really
you.
Wanted to get rid of him, why didn't he? So there was
right.
something else there, too, you know,
right.
as to why
right.
he
That's
didn't
right.
dismiss him. So,
right.
But you're right. I don't think he, you know, they should be giving a lot of credit to how she received the information. But, you know, that's how we'll get it, and we'll see on Tuesday, and I'm sure we'll talk about it next Sunday as to what we
oh,
really
yeah.
said and if things have been taken out of context just to get us all talking about it and getting ready to watch it.
All right, so
yes.
so for the last segment today, I want to shift focus since we're talking about we've introduced this whole notion of racism and how it still is permeating our society. I want to shift gears just for a moment to a story that I'm not sure that most people are aware of. Now, I'm going to read the blog post that, of course, coming by my executive producer, and I'm going to read it verbatim. And so we're going to talk about this before the end of the show. So it says, as I was watching the Missouri-Arizona State football game last night, something caught my eye. In the stands, there were several students in blackface. I thought I was seeing things, so I paused the TV, hit the rewind button, and looked again. It is safe to say I was not seeing things. So it goes on to say, since last night, I have found out that the school wanted the fans to dress up in all black to show strength against their opponent. Interesting that in this instance, black signifies strength. I have also found out that there was discussion on campus by certain groups as to whether it should be entire body or just the face. There was also some discussion from some students that they did not care how the media played it. They were only showing team spirit. To show support for their new all-black uniforms, once again, knowing the historical context of blackface, what was it? Some argue that it is no different than painting faces, bodies, orange or blue or maroon or any other school color. And it goes on to say, my response to this argument is history. So are these students racist for wearing blackface, or was it a racial act? Are they extremely insensitive? They do live in Arizona, or was this just plain stupid? Jima, what do you think about this? First of all, the whole blackface thing.
Well, I mean, the argument that it can go with any other school color and people paint their faces and stuff how does our brother Leo call that a false equivalency?
Yeah.
Because there's no way that you can compare the two because there's no historical connotation attached to maroon face. There's not a group of people that are offended by maroon face. So for them to even use that argument was irrelevant. The fact that it was questioned should have already told them it was probably not a good idea. When conversations like this come up, and maybe the school should have been a little bit more clear in their directions around painting yourself black to go with the new black uniforms. You know, it could have been everything but your face, then, you know, or whatever. And to make it so that there could not be a hint of racism or racist behavior in painting their faces black. Because some didn't paint their whole body. Some just did blackface. Some did add graphics to their face. Some did put sort of things on their head that made it look a little bit more slave-like, a hat that had some braids sticking up out of it. So those people knew exactly what they were doing. And so when you lump them all together, then it was a bad idea. It was stupid. It was insensitive, and in my opinion, some of them, it was a racist behavior because it should not have been something that they should have done and felt like it was going to be okay.
Abby, you want to weigh in?
Interesting. That's interesting.
Huh. Well, my position is this. Well, not my position, but I just want to ask this question, Jim. I want to, you know, follow a question to that particular one. Now, is it that, you know, African-Americans are being insensitive? Every little thing that happens, we want to say is racist. I mean, every little thing. Last couple of weeks, we had a young lady talk about, you know, throwing the president out the airplane. I mean, it was just a joke, right? Now we're talking about somebody wearing blackface and they're showing school spirit. Are we too insensitive, or is it just truly something going on here?
No, I don't think we're too sensitive. I think we're not sensitive enough, and we allow people to get away with things because we don't want to be sensitive. So you're not going to be able to look at me with blackface on and tell me that you don't think I should be offended by that. I don't really care what the connotation is. So that's unacceptable. And that's why my question was, I didn't say that they were. Were they, or were they just insensitive, or was it just plain stupid? And I think it's a combination of all of them. I think there were some that just, you know, so in la-la land. But see, here's the problem with that. That's our fault because we have failed to consistently communicate and educate our history, the good and the bad. We want to play like, and you know, you hear people, we were talking about this a couple weeks ago with Michelle Bachman and the whole thing around slavery, talking about black kids were better off in slavery. Well, if you have romanticized slavery, then yeah, I guess they were. But there was nothing romantic about slavery, you know. And so yet we say, oh, that's not what they meant. So when they say we're going to throw him out the airplane, out the helicopter, oh, they didn't say that. I don't remember anybody throwing Bush out of the helicopter and calling it a joke. I don't recall that. I really don't. And so you have to sit back and wonder, is it race? Are they being racist? Is it just a racist act? Or are they insensitive? Do they just not know? So it could be a combination of all of those, but I'm not going to say that it's not one of them because it's a combination of all of them. And for the people that did it and added the makeup to the face where they overemphasized certain features, they knew exactly what they were doing, and they dared anybody to call them out on it. And what we do, we don't want to call it what it is. Same thing when little things happen toward the president. Instead of the media and those other elected officials getting on television and calling out those things as they are, we don't want to make it be about race. But it is about race. It's the elephant in the room. And just like I said earlier, until we begin to acknowledge that it is about race, we will never get past race. We will never heal from this thing because we don't want to call it what it is.
Well,
so there's no way, you know, so when something happens in the Jewish community and somebody says something about Jewish and it's not funny to nobody, boy, they are on it like, I don't know what. We sit back and want to ponder as to whether or not that's really what it is. They'll find people out in the community and other black people to say, no, that's not, it wasn't racist. That's unacceptable. We are the only race of people that do that.
Okay, well, let me ask you.
We are the only race of people to do that.
And I totally hear what you're saying. But I kind of wonder, though, why is it that we don't have this outrage at all of the African Americans that sit around and call each other nigger? I don't understand why, when we hear them use the N-word in such a fashion, we don't call them racist. And here's why I say that. It's because if you substitute that word in for any other derogatory race word, there would be an enormous amount of outrage for them to sell those records with those words in there. But yet and still, you know, these records go platinum, meaning they're selling millions of copies with this type of language in there. And then, but yet and still, if we have somebody of the opposite race that do that, then it doesn't that tell them that it's okay since you all are doing it?
Well,
we've been trained.
That's a whole.
We've been trained.
I agree. Yeah. And that's a whole nother show too, Patrick. We don't have time to touch that.
Here's what happened. If we're in a society where people are dogging themselves. They keep talking about themselves. They keep saying that you this and you that, and we selling and we all celebrate it because we buy it. You don't talk about celebrating as an opinion, or I think they're saying that it's okay because that's my opinion. It's okay because you look at the data. The data shows you that they're selling millions of these records, and you can't tell me that we're not buying them. So the outrage that we show towards other groups of people that do something as a gesture that may be offensive in some cases, it may not be offensive in other cases. We tolerate our own people for doing that. So I'm going to say, until we stand up to our own people and says we draw the line and say, nope, the line in the sand is that we're not going to tolerate ourselves, then we can go out and say, tell somebody else that they're not going to treat us like that.
Well, here's what I want to bring to your memory.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching a movie a couple of weeks ago on Dr. King, and it started. This is when Paul Whitfield was playing Dr. King in this movie, and it was the night the first time he went down to Memphis to do the sanitation march with the sanitation workers, and something happened during that time in which a young black man, several of them, actually charged Dr. King, came at him and hit him, actually. And so it erupted into this big major scene where it was violence, you know, at that was supposed to be a peaceful march. It was violence at this nonviolent march. So the point was is that see, it showed, I told y'all they not nonviolent. He's just an agitator, and he's coming down here to create a problem.
Well, I remember that. Mm-hmm.
They wanted him to come back, and so he goes back to Memphis, and they're interviewing some of the young men that had something to do with what happened, and it finally came out that they had been paid by the FBI to do what they did. They had been paid by the FBI to create a scene. So you wonder where's the outrage when there are people that stand out and stand out against the lyrics in rap music. Then you'll have somebody of color come on television and say, oh, it's, you know, that's just how it is. That's just their vernacular. It's just this. They excuse it away. So I'm going to say it might not be the FBI paying them, but somebody is paying them. It's the same strategy.
That's right.
Because it's
worked. Right.
So they're not going to change their strategy. they're going to find that person that needs something. It's just like a person who's working in a high-profile company in high-level security. Well, there's a reason why you have to have certain kinds of clearances and not have a whole lot of debt, because you will be an easy target for somebody to come after. You would be an easy target for somebody to, you know, drop you, you know, a couple thousand dollars when they know you living above your means. Mm-hmm. So it'll be easy for them to come get you. So that's why you can't get the message to be given out loudly, because so many of us are so down and out that it's easy to throw me some crumbs. It's easy to say, well, if you go out and say this, then
that's right.
I'll make
and
sure your next record gets played, okay?
That's right.
So I'll make
that's
sure
right.
that the radio stations are going to put you on. So you go ahead on and say this. It's still happening. It might not be the FBI, but we are still getting paid to agitate and to disrupt. So that's why.
So what happened to this generation then that we don't pay the sacrifice like they did when you had such a movement like the Montgomery Boys boycott, right? They just said, we're not going to do it, and then nobody do it. I mean, they were unified in that sense, right? And so in order to move the country forward, they had to be unified. What is our generation's problem when it comes to that then?
Well, you have twofold. One is that I no longer see myself as my brother's keeper. This is a generation that is unchurched, that has no fear of God, has no fear of authority. And when you remove those basic things from our day-to-day lives, this is what you get. You get chaos. You cannot not have a spiritual base and treat your neighbor like we're treating one another. So when you'd rather go do a drive-by and shoot up an entire house on the notion that who you looking for is in there. You have no fear of anything. You don't have a fear of dying, because that's just what you've seen. That's what you've been taught. That's what you've been fed. And so, unfortunately, the voice of reason has been silenced, because for me to say something, then somebody might come after me. So instead of me calling, you know, I love my mother because she has yet to stand down. At 70 years old, if she thinks something going on illegal across the street, she is calling the police. She will not. You will not tear up my neighborhood. If she thinks something happening, she's saying somebody come over here and drive them down the street. We don't do that anymore. And that's why we have a generation that is so far removed from anything that they think they have it all, because they have a lot of stuff, but their soul has been taken out with the stuff. And so it's because of that we have all of these other things going on.
Wow. Well, that's our show. We're going to end on that note. I would like to thank all the listeners for tuning in. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. I would like to give a special thanks to the Motor City Maharani, tuning in and calling in and hosting the show today. Also, the executive producer of Current Events, Ask Jima. Go out to her blog, and that's askjema.blogspot.com. And of course, you have Current Events blog out there. This is where we get all of our stories. So if you want to be able to go out and see what's happening across the country, across the world, visit our blog. And that's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. That's TaylorMade TalkRadio.blogspot.com. Also, you can follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. TaylorMade101. Until next time, remember, it is written, my people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged, stay informed, and stay plugged in. to current events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer, Sweet Dreams. Take us away, Joyce.